The hardest part of any transformation is never the technology. It's actually getting the people to adopt in a way that genuinely changes how the business operates. Supply chains are full of bureaucracy and because of like age-old operations methods. The key lesson, which I never forget, is that technology has to fit naturally into how people work and not how you wish they work.
Welcome to Supply Chain Now, the number one voice of supply chain. Join us as we share critical news, key insights, and real supply chain leadership from across the globe, one conversation at a time.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Scott Luton and special co-host Jorge Morales with you here on Supply Chain Now. Welcome to today's show. Jorge, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Scott. Thank you. Thank you. And welcome, everyone.
Welcome, welcome. It's great to see you again. It's good to see you. We were last together in Vegas at Manifest, and I know we've rubbed elbows a couple times since then. I really enjoyed your perspective, but Jorge, you set a high standard with your industry perspective, and I tell you, we're going to hit it out of the park along those lines with our guests today, because today, folks, we've got a very practical deep dive, that's what I'm going to call it, on AI within global supply chain, especially from a been there, done that industry perspective. That's a very valuable perspective. We're going to be discussing AI from a variety of angles, including what powers successful scale of AI initiatives, gaps between what I'll call the AI haves and the AI have-nots, and how to bridge those gaps, perspective on critical guideposts that AI initiatives need to have in place. Plus, we're going to explore a few of our favorite use cases. And Jorge, it always comes back to leadership and people. We're going to be discussing how the golden age of supply chain tech is forcing the evolution of the leadership tool belt and the talent management strategies that are out in the market. All of this and much, much more. Jorge, great to have you back with us. Are you ready for today's conversation?
Yes, of course I'm ready, and I'm very enthusiastic. I think we're living in very exciting times. Things are changing every month with this AI revolution. Things are moving really, really fast. It seems like it was a few months ago, November of 22, when we were introduced to ChatGPT. And in 2024, the standards for applications to connect with these AI agents, 2025, the agent-to-agent protocol. Things are moving at a really, really fast pace, and it's exciting to see how things are really happening. And I'm glad that our guest today will speak about how things are happening, what's really happening in the trenches, and the real world experience. What we're talking about here,
Jorge. That's right, exciting and challenging, but also innovative. And the conversation today, to your point, is going to offer some wonderful actionable perspective. So I'm going to dive right in. We're going to introduce our guest first. So our wonderful audience out there, the SCN Global fam, kind of has some context. Prabhat Panaka is a product and supply chain transformation leader specializing, as we've been talking about, in AI, digital twins, and intelligent enterprise systems. He has led initiatives across fulfillment, warehouse operations, and enterprise decision support, helping organizations improve resilience, productivity, and operational performance at scale. Prabhat's experience includes large transformation programs supporting companies such as Lowe's, Johnson Controls, BASF, Dow, and Kraft Heinz. He's a frequent speaker and thought leader on AI-driven supply chain transformation with a focus on translating emerging technologies into practical operating models and measurable business outcomes. We all need better translators, better Sherpas at all of that. Please join me in welcoming Prabhat Panaka, lead product manager for supply chain at Lowe's, as well as an advisory board member at the International Supply Chain Education Alliance. Hey, Prabhat, how you doing?
Hey, Scott, great. And thanks for a great introduction. I'm glad to be on this one.
Well, great to have you. And Jorge, Prabhat has been busy. That is quite a journey we just shared there, huh?
Yes. He's a very experienced professional, and we're proud to have him in the ISEA advisory board. He joined us during our panel in Las Vegas, where we met in Manifest in February. And it's great to have him here.
Well, it is. And two quick thoughts before we get to the fun warm-up question. Number one, I love the element of his background where he translates emerging technologies to those folks that really want to, you know, make it happen for their people and organizations. Blessed are those bridges that bridge that divide. And secondly, folks, you probably heard me talk about this. I'm a big Lowe's fan. I'm a big Costco fan, but I'm a big Lowe's fan. I'll just tell him, Prabhat, I'm in the stores. Seems like once a weekend now that spring has hit Georgia. So we'll probably weave that in somewhere here. But Prabhat, welcome in. We got a lot of work to get to, Prabhat and Jorge. Big show. I think it's going to offer a lot of actionable perspective and it'll make people hungry. But I want to do this, Prabhat. I want to level set on your professional background. Prior to your current role, you know, I mentioned some of the companies earlier in the introduction you've worked with. Give us a couple of key roles that really shaped your worldview, Prabhat.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey over the last decade. I started really as like an industrial engineer on the shop floor, doing time studies, kind of hunting for process inefficiencies. That's where I kind of like, you know, developed a deep appreciation for what technology can do. Because often not like, you know, removing waste kind of like meant like you had to implement some sort of like technology system. And so when it is thoughtfully applied, and I think like technology can be a game changer is the first lesson that I learned from my industrial engineer days. And then further on, like, you know, I kind of like pivoted into a purely supply chain strategy and technology consultant with a couple of big four consulting companies, working on large-scale transformations for Fortune 50 companies in supply chain, right? And the hardest part of any transformation is never the technology. It's actually getting the people to adopt in a way that genuinely changes how the business operates. For example, I had a client, a large chemicals company, go through like, you know, about 6 advanced planning system implementations, and each one struggled. And the technology was good on paper and was good when implemented, but people never fully embraced it. And as you probably know, right, supply chains are full of bureaucracy and because of like age-old operations methods. And that's what was the key lesson, which I never forget, is that technology has to fit naturally into how people work and not how you wish they worked, right? And that kind of like experience fundamentally shapes how I think about product design and supply chain systems today in my current role too.
You know, Jorge was smiling during a portion of your response, and I'm sure it's because he's heard that, we've all heard that challenge time and time again. It oftentimes, and there's plenty of technologies that you know, aren't great, but oftentimes there are great technological solutions, and the greatest challenge is one of those that you called out, and that's getting our hardworking, talented people to adopt the new technology, the new process, the new chapter that transformations bring. Jorge, I know you've heard this quite a few times before, huh?
Yes, definitely. A lot of people think that we need to be, in the case of AI, which is, you can apply that to any technology, but AI is something we're now all already familiar with. We are now all AI aware. So we kind of understand what it is. But a lot of people think we have to be AI proficient. And a lot of people dedicate their whole lives to becoming AI proficient. So that's a skill that's difficult to get. However, in the middle, there's the sweet spot in which supply chain professionals should be, which is they need to be AI competent. And what I mean by that is they need to be able to harness the technology, understand the language, understand what technology can do, what it can't do, and be able to, like if you don't need to understand, we made that analogy some time ago, but you don't need to understand what's under the hood of a truck.
Right.
In order to use trucks to move what your business is producing, right?
You
can harness the power of trucks and the same thing happens with technology, but you need to understand how to use the trucks, what's around all the trucks, what if, even the details, if when you get into the curve and there's a bank and need what speed you get, you need to. But so those are the kind of things that you need to understand where the limits between being proficient and aware are, and what you need to know to be competent, and the standards, what are the guardrails, what's the knowledge that's really needed. In ISCA, we focus a lot on that.
Yes.
We focus a lot on getting our certification programs, CSETP, the Technology Professional Program, focused on that. And now we're getting a spin-off from that, the Certified Professional in Supply Chain AI. So
right.
That's coming out very, very soon, because things are moving at a really fast pace. And people need to understand that sweet spot. They need to understand what they need to know.
Right.
How technology can be used. And in the so I love that Prabhat has been working with all that. And
yes.
We're very proud to have people like Prabhat in our advisory board and helping us get our programs better and better every time.
I'm with you. All right. We've talked about the need to get at least AI competent. You don't have to become an AI subject matter expert, but I'm going to try to get my AI competent certification from Prabhat in this conversation. Jorge's already got his. But I think also for important context, before we get into the AI part of the conversation today, Prabhat, if you would tell us more about your current role and what you do at one of my favorite companies, being Lowe's. And then also, I want to touch on what you're doing with ISCA, but tell us what you're doing at Lowe's first.
Yeah, for sure. And thanks for being a great customer. And we want to make our stores as seamless for, like, you know, homeowners like yourself to come and shop at it and make it a memorable experience. And so thank you. So in my current role as lead product manager for supply chain tech at Lowe's, what I do is, like, I focus on building the core systems that power our warehouse operations, which supports our 1,700 plus stores across continental US. Primarily, it is going to be our warehousing management systems, which I call it as, like, the system of record for everything that moves through our facilities, right?
Mm.
So this work is kind of, like, very foundational, because here's what I believe. You cannot layer AI or agentic AI on top of, like, fragile infrastructure or lack of data or lack of process and kind of expect it to perform. So the data has to be clean, the systems have to be well integrated, and the kind of, like, logic that powers them has to be, like, you know, sound. Before you can, like, you know, trust AI to do, like, you know, some sort of, like, actions on your behalf and not just advice, right? Mm. And that's exactly what we are building, a future where AI isn't surfacing recommendations, but kind of handling exceptions, triggering workflows, and escalating with the right context, which I call as bounded autonomy, which means an AI that operates within defined rules and knows when to escalate to humans. I think that is going to be the key for tomorrow across supply chain. So the work that I'm doing is laying that foundation, and that makes AI futures safe, effective, and governable in terms of execution in tomorrow's supply chain environment at Lowe's.
Prabhat, I love it. And when you say tomorrow, you're not talking about Thursday. You're talking in a greater sense in terms of the next age we're moving into.
Yeah, next age we're moving into. So that's a good call out.
Hey, and really quick, I tell you, it's like supply chain utopia. You paint this picture, clean data, integrated systems, sound logic. Man, when you've got those three things fundamentally, you can move mountains, not just in supply chain, but elsewhere. Quick follow-up. To do all of that stuff and really operate a successful organization here in 2026, you got to continuously learn new things, right? And of course, we reference your role as a board member at the one and only ISCEA, which Jorge leads as global COO. Tell us about the importance of continuous learning, Prabhat.
I think continuous learning is a principle that every industrial engineer or every supply chain practitioner kind of carries with themselves, right? From that core principles of, like, lean thinking. But I would say that, like, as kind of AI becomes central, right, the role itself is changing and supply chain practitioners are not kind of isolated from it. So what I mean by that is that, like, your operations or supply chain operations is focused on doing what I call as hands-on coordination tasks. And that would change into what I call as like, you know, system architect roles. You know, people who design AI systems, govern AI systems, and then coach the surrounding teams on how to, like, you know, manage the shift. So like your role as a supply chain operator, in my opinion, is going to shift from, like, you know, that coordinator to more of a systems architect and a coach. And what does that mean from a learning perspective? You have to be prepared for that evolution of the job role. And that's where I think, like, you know, organizations such as ISEA, like, you know, play a very crucial role. You know, they provide like the certifications and the trainings on the topic, like which are infused from like latest industry insights, like from people like me and others on the board. And I also selfishly believe that being part of ISEA, I'm like kind of like sharpening my own skills by kind of hearing insights from others on the board, and then simultaneously helping, like, you know, Jorge and his team, like, you know, prepare the best learning material that could be there for supply chain practitioners so that we can all evolve together in the age of, like, you know, AI-enabled supply chains, which is not going to be very far. I think by 2030, you're going to have, like, you know, major enterprises working, and a large part of it, like, you know, working on autonomous supply chains.
Mm. Man, triple win is what I'm hearing there. And Jorge, going back to the value of continuous learning, which is almost an imperative. When you and I were talking and I interviewed you in Vegas, you kind of put it bluntly, and I pulled up the blog article here to my right, adapt or be left behind. Well, the only way to really adapt is be able to train in what you must learn and train in what you must adapt to. Your thoughts, Jorge?
Yes, as I said, these are exciting times, but you can either do the homework, put roll up your sleeves and get into it. You can make that decision and try to remain current, to keep up to date and keep your job.
Right.
Or you can risk being replaced by either an AI agent or someone who can harness the technology in a better way. So I think it's very, very important that we become self-conscious to understand more. Not
yes.
All of us are familiar with code programming, but we can use them. And we can learn to use them very effectively by developing this network of agents and harnessing these tools. We can make our companies more efficient and make ourselves more valuable for the company.
Yes. So folks, if you don't get your continuous and regular learning opportunities from ISCEA, get that help somewhere. It's imperative because, as Jorge said, you may not be replaced by AI, but you will definitely be replaced by someone that uses AI better than you do, right? That's a big threat. Not for everybody, perhaps, but kind of depends on your background and what you do. Let's dive in. Prabhat, I want to get into AI because there's a lot of, for all the successes out there, there's still a lot of heartburn and friction from those organizations trying to find their own right AI gear. So I think you've said in the past, the conversation is moving, thankfully, beyond pilots. So what separates those organizations that actually scale AI from those stuck in endless experimentation? Prabhat?
A lot of my colleagues think that technology is the differentiator, but like technology is not the real differentiator. Like it's the operating model around like how you enable that technology is the differentiator. So what I've seen is that, like, you know, companies that get stuck in pilots, it's about like lack of structure and accountability. In my experience, successful organizations do is they try to embed AI into workflows and with clear, defined, like, ownership, and they're fine with starting with, like, good enough data. And, you know, it's a common theme that data garbage in and garbage out, right? So when it comes to data, if you end up, like, waiting for, like, that data to be correct, you will not move beyond that pilot to, like, production. So they take that calculated risk in moving forward with that good enough data. And one of the other primary things that I've seen where organizations have become successful in moving AI pilots to productions is setting out, like, you know, what objectives that they're going to chase with this AI decisioning tool or AI workflows, right? Either it can be cost of doing some activity or the speed of it. Like, how do you measure it effectively? And how do you make sure that, like, it's actually moving the needle? And this all kind of informs us to a point where that model is actually successful and it's kind of like giving the necessary outcomes that we had desired it to be. And when you want to move it to production, the real challenge, which I kind of touched upon early on, is like change management, right? The difference between AI and some automation capabilities, AI is more of a probabilistic output and automation is more deterministic in nature. So there's a little bit of like learning that we need to do as operators in order to like learn, like, you know, how to digest that data point and make decisions upon that data point, trust that data point, right? So ultimately, people need to trust and use it. What I've seen is that, like, you know, the pilot is successful. It ticks on all of those goals, but then like it fails when it moves to production because people are not able to make sense of the data that is being recommended out of the AI model, right? So, and finally, one more thing, right? Like, we need leaders who are willing to accept a learning curve. And this technology is kind of new. It's being implemented in companies right now. So there's a lot of like unknowns that are there, right? Like, you should be comfortable with, like, you know, the first bump. Let's say you decide to launch it, but it doesn't go well. You should be comfortable with that. And so in summary, I would say, like, you know, making AI successful from pilots to production is all about structure, is about ownership, is about defining success from the start and being uncomfortable and going on that learning journey.
Prabhat, love it. Now, what I heard, I loved your summary too. I'm going to add my own. This is what I heard from Prabhat, Jorge. The data, the targeting of the right problems with AI, change management, of course, the outcomes and the data outputs have to be actionable and be trusted. And then, of course, what is not about leadership? You know, leadership is like, I learned in science in second grade that water is a universal solvent. Leadership is also the universal solvent and, of course, has a place when it comes to AI. Jorge, what'd you hear there from Prabhat?
Yes, I agree with Prabhat 100% on measuring how good are you doing and getting the results, because based on that, you have the arguments of moving forward, to going further with these initiatives. And I think what Prabhat said also makes sense with what you said about leadership. If the leadership is aware that there are going to be bumps and there's things are not going to be working as expected from day one, things are going to be easier. It's going to be like Napoleon used to say, dress me slowly because I'm in a hurry. if you hurry when you're dressing up, you might do it wrong.
That's right. It's interesting to call out, but based on what both of you are sharing here, even with the perfect structure and approach, there's going to be bumps and there's going to be friction. All of them are reason to really do your homework on the front end to driving change with AI, using whatever tool is finely tuned. All right, so let's talk about this, Prabhat. The biggest gap today that you see between what AI can do in supply chain, right? The art of the possible, or what I'll call maybe the art of the practical possible, right? And what companies are actually implementing and doing with it. What's important to note about that gap?
Yeah, I wrote a recent article about it and it kind of resonated with, like, you know, multiple supply chain leaders on LinkedIn. But the biggest gap that I kind of talk in that article is, like, you know, most companies still treat AI as kind of a recommendation tool when it's kind of fully capable of being an execution engine. So here's what I mean. Like, you know, today companies use AI models to make surface decisions. For example, demand forecasting. You need to, like, you know, order a certain product. And then with the coming of age of like ChatGPT and LLMs and generative AI, they put a chatbot on top of that, like, recommendation. And now you can query in natural language. And that's the most that, like, most companies have done. But the true power that I talk about in that article is about what I call as compressing the detect, decide, and act loop. So, for example, take this. You have a warehouse. Warehouse operations, damaged pallets often show up at the warehouse. Today, what happens is that typically that gets put aside and it waits for a human to do something about it. Imagine tomorrow, like, AI embedded in that workflow. Like, you know, agentic AI could immediately place a hold, open a supplier claim, notify the right people, all within the right context, all without doing any warning, right? And that is where I think, like, the real value comes out of is, like, when you embed AI into those execution workflows. So the technology to do that is existing today. So I think it is just an organizational willingness to let AI execute and not just advise. And I think the core challenge in that is defining what I call as bounded autonomy. So that is being explicit where AI can act independently and where, like, it needs to escalate to a human. So the whole human in the loop concept. And that boundary is not a technical problem. I think it's a leadership decision issue. So until that companies can make that shift from insight to execution, they're only capturing a fraction of, like, what AI can deliver. So, you know, move from beyond chatbots to execution, embed AI into execution is going to be my biggest advice.
I like it, Prabhat. Jorge, did you hear that? Back to your pickup truck. AI can be the execution engine in that pickup truck you're using earlier. What did you gather from what Prabhat just shared about how to, in a way, cross the gap, cross the chasm, and really realize and leverage more of what it can be rather than just that recommendation tool that, like, 95% of humanity is using it for? Let it be that execution engine. Your thoughts, Jorge?
Yes, I think AI agents have the great potential of autonomy, in that opens a lot of opportunities and possibilities. However, I still think that we need to be careful. And that's part of what I was saying about being AI competent. You need to know what AI can and cannot do. But you also need to understand how and what level can you rely on AI. And you still need to understand the issues that must be handled from the cybersecurity perspective, for example. That's the reason why it's very important to learn more.
So, Jorge, you're reading my mind where I want to go next with Prabhat, because one of the things you're kind of implying and speaking to there, and you mentioned this earlier in one of your responses, is guardrails, right? Before we can broadly trust and really allow, give permission, give human permission to AI to make or execute those decisions truly autonomously, because that's what is the practical possibilities today. Prabhat, what guardrails when it comes to data or governance or organizational, what must we got to put in place, Prabhat?
I would broadly organize it into three layers, the first being around data integrity. About this, autonomous AI decisions are kind of like only as trustworthy as the data feeding them, like bad data in, bad data out, right?
Right.
So before you let a system execute autonomously, not just recommend, you need to know where the data comes from first. How fresh is it? Because there's a concept of, like, data drift, and that leads to a decision drift. And you need to know, like, what happens when it's wrong. So kind of like have a fail mechanism. So most organizations haven't, like, answered those questions honestly. So that is, like, you know, the first layer of execution or operational capability that you need to develop is understand data integrity, right? And the second, according to me, is setting up these decision boundaries. You have to be very explicit about, like, what AI is allowed to decide versus what requires a human in the loop. Think about, like, you know, exception-based planning and supply chains, right? It's similar. You have to do, like, you know, exception-based autonomous decision-making, right? And I'll give you like one example. Think about a system that can automatically reorder $50,000 of inventory. Is very different from the one that can cancel a $5 million supplier contract. So
yes,
there's magnitude of impact that you need to like take into consideration when setting up these decision guardrails. And these boundaries need to be designed deliberately and not kind of discovered after something goes wrong. And that is where I think it's very important for tomorrow's supply chain operators to do understand how AI operates and understand what AI can do so that you are enabling these decision boundaries. And the third is what I think is about auditability and traceability. What I mean by that is that when an autonomous decision taken by AI kind of causes the problem, and it is going to bound to happen at some point, you need to be in a position to explain why exactly the system did what it did. And it's not for compliance, but actually it's because you can get the feedback to improve the system and maintain that organizational trust in it. It goes back to my key point that I mentioned earlier, is like any technology is as good as like the organization that adopts it. If you lose the trust, then the organizational adoption goes away. And if you can't explain that decision, you're not ready to automate it really. So those are the three things: data integrity, decision boundaries, and the ability to audit.
Yes. And if you don't have answers to those questions, you're going to get in trouble. Prabhat, also. Hey, but really quick, when you talk about those decision boundaries, Jorge, and he was using that kind of example, that was a good example, right? The 50,000 versus the 5 million. But also kind of reminds me, especially when we think about, you know, how a lot of folks use that like child analogy with AI as it continues to kind of mature and get older and older. My brain goes, Jorge, to my three kids and the decision boundaries I have in place with them for their allowances or for anything. Yes, you can buy that $5 cup of coffee, but no, you cannot buy that $500 dress or Amazon order. Jorge, is that you have those similar decision boundaries?
Yeah, as you know, I have four kids, and yeah, the same thing happens. So.
And for good reason.
And I think companies are facing the same issues because, as Prabhat said, AI agents are like having another member in the team. If the rules are not in place, and if those guardrails are not preventing it from doing damage.
Yes.
So it's so the same thing happened with my kids. And of course, they evolve, they
right.
learn. They're not the same guardrails there for my 9 year old than for my those who are already graduated and in making their own rules. The same thing will happen with eventually.
And you know, I love how practical you kind of captured those three guardrails. When the guardrails and think of governance, there's all kinds of, you know, insecurity, all that, there's all kinds of usuals. But I really liked how you tackled those three exams. And there's a long list of guardrails, but those three: data integrity, decision boundaries, and of course that very valuable audibility and traceability, if I capture that right. All right. So Prabhat, when it comes all together, right? Because a lot of your journey, you've been using a lot of what you've been sharing here, and you've been driving outcomes. So when you think of one of your favorite recent use cases associated with the implementation of AI, Prabhat, what's one of your favorite stories here recently?
Yeah, this is one interesting example. And this comes from a peer study that I did with some of ISCA board members in how agentic AI kind of like is changing the role of like, you know, supply chain operators. So this example comes from like a membership-based wholesale retailer. Think high-volume distribution centers processing enormous amounts of inventory daily, right? And what they did is that they deployed a computer vision AI to monitor inventory flow in real time, which basically meant automatically detecting defects, damages, and kind of like labeling errors as product moved through the facility. This goes back to the example that I gave earlier in the podcast. So what, according to me, is remarkable, it was not just the application of the technology, but it was the operational outcome. So these claims used to take days to resolve. It used to wait for somebody to act upon it, for somebody to like adjust the inventory, issue supplier claims, notify the stakeholders. Now all of it was being handled by this AI agent autonomously in minutes. So your inspection cycles compress from like days to minutes. And this goes back to the whole concept of compressing detect, decide, and act loop, right? And here's the other interesting aspect. This is the most interesting aspect to me. The manager's job description essentially wrote itself, right? The DC manager went from like personally executing these operational tasks to now governing the edge cases that AI couldn't handle. Like, what are the exceptions that AI needs a human in the loop? So he was just managing now, and his work went up in scale of what I call as like value chain, kind of managing like vendor relationships at a systematic level rather than at a transactional level is one example. And he gave me this statement. He said, like, my role shifted from operational execution to strategic governance. And I think that's a real use case of like AI, not just saving time, but fundamentally changing what a supply chain leader will be doing tomorrow.
Not Thursday, in the bigger picture, next chapter. Sorry, I keep coming back to that, Prabhat. I love it. All right. So, Jorge, I love that example. And here's why. I'm trying to keep up notes fast and furiously. It's tough to keep up with Prabhat. You already know this, Jorge. The sheer operational outcomes, right? The efficiencies gained, compressing that cycle, right? All the days, the manual work, getting rid of a lot of that. You're going to be delighting customers and probably some suppliers based on the supplier's role in the inventory decisions to be made. And the best part, perhaps, Prabhat and Jorge, which you finished on, which is really elevating the value and the role of the humans as part of this inventory initiative. That's my favorite part. Jorge, your thoughts?
We have wonderful opportunities ahead of improving our processes from a different perspective, not just the efficiency or the making things faster or these repetitive tasks, improving quality.
Right.
Because all those will be handled in some way by these AI agents. But there are many ways in which our processes will be improved strategically in terms of innovation, in terms of having these minds becoming more creative, becoming dealing with what AI is not capable of dealing with, like procedural competence or creativity or coming up with completely new things. Because AI learns very well from the past, but it is our job to envision where we're going next, where what things have not happened yet and how things can improve in a different way or finding a new direction. So
right.
Those are the kind of decisions that will be made by humans and supply chain professionals capable to understand that and understand where are they adding value to the company, to the processes. I think that's the place where we all want to be.
So let's do this, Prabhat.
Yes.
We're going to put your advisor hat on here, Prabhat. If you're advising a global enterprise that were starting their AI journey today, they're getting late. What a late start, but that's what they're doing. If they want to drive real impact within 6 months, not 6 years, what is your golden piece of advice or two that you'd challenge them with?
I think there would be three things that I would tell them immediately. The first is to start with a decision, not like linger upon like a data set. So I think most companies need to start by asking what data So most companies do start by asking what data do they have. I think the better question is to ask what decisions do we make repeatedly that are slow, expensive, and inconsistent. Find those, kind of work backward to have the data and the models you need. And that framing alone, like, you know, will save you 18 months. So you, instead of starting chasing data, you should start chasing, like, identifying the decisions and the problems that you need to solve, right? And the second, I think, is the most important one, is to find a business owner, not a tech owner, for every AI initiative. So I've seen this like multiple times. If the only person that is accountable for deploying AI is the IT or data science team, it will never actually scale, because the scaling part comes as, like, you know, moving from pilot to production, right? And that's where building trust is very important. And you need somebody's business performance directly attached to that, like, you know, what that AI is going to do. And that is what is going to move the needle when that AI system is going to be in production. And the third is, I touched upon this earlier, that you should be comfortable with your first deployment being a very, very humbling experience. And this, and what I've seen over years is the companies that scale AI are not the ones, like, you know, who got it right first time. Even think about, like, Google. Google was much more further than ChatGPT, but they still waited. And ChatGPT got launched by OpenAI, right? So it's not necessarily that you get everything right the first time, but the ones that are successful become successful because they build the organizational structure and reflexes to learn fast, adapt, and kind of keep experimenting. And so, in essence, resiliency matters more than perfection in early stages, sticking to the strategy of, like, deploying AI. And so this was like one learning that I have had, like, over years, is that enterprises that are good at, like, doing technology aren't necessarily the ones better with strategy, but they started earlier and they kind of stayed consistent along that journey. And that is what is giving them benefits when, like, you know, it comes and matches up with business outcomes.
So Prabhat, that was really good. Those three pieces of advice. It was so good that you might be tempted to send us an invoice, and don't do that. Okay. I can't afford your invoices, Prabhat. But kidding aside, Jorge, that was really good. Very practical. Been there, done that advice for companies, you know, just now kind of getting their feet wet and standing up their AI initiatives. What'd you think, Jorge?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's very important to understand the problem first, what needs to be solved instead of what can I do. The way Prabhat put it, I think it was amazing, because sometimes you know what you can do because you have the data or you have the tools or you have access to some other third-party data. But what you can do might not be the thing you need to do.
Right.
you need to start deciding first what's that need that
That's
needs
right.
to be addressed through technology.
That's
and
right.
That's the main point. So I totally agree with Prabhat.
And starting with starting with those decisions, especially if those decisions can be stressful, regularly inaccurate, and multitudes of decisions taking tons and tons of time. So I like that. All right. So for the sake of time, we're going to bring it back to leadership. I was going to ask you about talent, but I'm going to ask you about leadership instead. And then we're going to make sure folks know how to connect with you, Prabhat, and you, Jorge. And Jorge, you're not getting out of giving me your favorite key takeaway from what all the brilliance that Prabhat is sharing with us here today. So get ready for that. Your key takeaway. Prabhat, that's what we said earlier. Everything comes back to leadership, right? One of the big common themes you've said here about leadership throughout all of your perspective is how we've got to get comfortable with the bumps and the dead ends and the failures as we experiment and we try to craft the right strategy that brings the desired outcomes. That doesn't come natural for a bunch of folks or a bunch of leaders out there. So along those lines, how does the optimal leadership tool belt change as we have long since entered the golden age of supply chain technology?
Yeah, I think what I've come to understand is that the leadership tool belt changes in a pretty fundamental way. What I mean by that is that in past or in the current environment, a lot of like good supply chain leaders do great is about coordination, right? It's about like following up across functions, managing exceptions, and like making sure that kind of information moved from one team to another, right? So it's about like, you know, driving that operations day in and day out, right? So in the future, when technology is going to start to take about more of that analytical and coordination work through autonomous agents or robotics, so I believe the leader's role kind of like shifts upward in the value chain, right? So what I mean by that is that this is a concept that I kind of alluded earlier on to is leaders increasingly have to think like system architects and coaches. And system architects in the sense they need to design how workflows, data, automation, and decisions fit together. And coaches in the sense that they need to help teams learn, adapt, and trust in the systems, right? And know when that human judgment still matters. So I would say the 2030 model leadership tool belt and supply chain is going to be less about supervision, more about systems thinking, change management, exception judgment is one more key area, and then guiding human AI collaboration. That's to me is a big shift. I think the work that Jorge is doing with ISEA kind of like helps, you know, supply chain professionals navigate that change over the next few years.
Mm. Prabhat, we're going to need a lot more technology Sherpas and trusted advisors and a lot more Prabhat Panakas as we navigate tons of opportunity, but also tons of change and tons of who moved my cheese, like that old book, tons of new ways of doing things. It's all exciting, but it also creates some consternation for a lot of folks out there. Jorge, respond to how Prabhat talked about the evolving optimal leadership tool belt.
I think it's very important that all of us take our place in embrace the responsibility that understand what's our part in all of this. Because yes, leaders need to define the direction. Leaders need to motivate their teams. They need to become pro technology. But ourselves as individuals, we also need to be ready. And I think that's something very important. And a key takeaway from what Prabhat said today is make that decision. But that decision, not just for the company, not just as a company leader of deciding to implement or move in the AI direction, but yourselves, every one of us need to make a decision on becoming AI competent, on learning more, on getting into that sweet spot in which all these technology jargon is not like gibberish or words hard to understand, that we can understand what technology people are talking about with not to be proficient, we don't have to be that subject matter expert, but we need to understand how to harness technology. And I think that's very important. Learning, becoming certified, and also attending events. Next October, we have our supply chain technology conference. I'm inviting all of you to attend either virtually or in person. It's, you know, now it's going to take place in Malaysia, because that's an itinerant event, but you can attend virtually and learn from all these experts. Prabhat was there last year, and if you register, you can watch his recording, because we're making all the previous year recordings available to those who register for the virtual program. And learn more, get more perspectives, get more knowledge and make that decision to change your mindset into becoming AI competent.
I love it. And folks can go, how can they find the SC Supply Chain Tech? What's the site, Jorge, for folks to find information on that?
Yeah, it's sctechshow.com. You can find more information about that particular event there. But also on the ISCA global website, isca.org. And you can find more information about the ISCA certification programs there, the technology certification programs and other certification programs for supply chain professionals.
Outstanding.
I'm also actually speaking at the 2026 1-2, Jorge.
How about that? Okay, late breaking news right here on Supply Chain Now. Late breaking news, Prabhat.
Yeah, we have a great lineup of experts, and that thank you, Prabhat.
And the topics might be interesting to the audience. It's about talking about ontology as an enabling layer for agentic AI workflows.
Okay.
So ontology kind of refers to stitching upon all of your data together in a knowledge based graph. So you can put an agent on top of it and then have the agent navigate these decision points across cross domains. So it is an interesting topic.
It is.
To call it out.
sctechshow.com for that fall event. And then also in the broader sense, you can go to iscea.org. Is that right, Jorge?
That is correct.
Okay. All right. So did you see how sneaky Jorge was? He worked in those key takeaways in that same question. So in those key takeaways, get ready, but not just get ready. You got to lean in and engage. And not just because if you're a leader, like a formal leader, because we're all leaders, right? We really are. If you choose to be one, we've got to really put our own fate and our own success in our own hands. And we all have an opportunity to do that each and every day. So don't wait till your organization says, hey, do you want to go do this? Look for those learning opportunities now. Okay, so Prabhat, other than your esteemed keynotes that sounds like you've got coming up, how can folks connect with you, Prabhat Panaka?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn, Prabhat Panaka, and connect with me there. And I would be interested in learning about others' problems and debates that they are doing different from what I just described. It's always great to connect with folks from supply chain industry. It's kind of a very small world. That's what I realized at Manifest. So I think a lot of familiar faces and names might be watching this podcast.
Maybe so. It's a big, small world, Prabhat. It's kind of what I've come to realize about global supply chain. A lot of folks know each other, but you're constantly meeting new companies and new startups and new leaders. I love the one element about supply chain I really love is it brings people all the time from other sectors and other functional areas of global business. And that really is a strength of our industry, I believe. Jorge, how can folks track you down?
You can connect with me through LinkedIn. And also, you can write me directly to my email. It's Jorge or with J or jorgem@isca.com.
So outstanding. Way,
you can connect with me. And also, we can all go to Javier's in Vegas because
yes,
we're having our ISCA prize ceremony in Vegas next February. So if you're going to be there for Manifest, be sure to join the ISCA recognition ceremony. And after that, we can go to Javier's to have some Mexican food.
Let's do it. So folks, you can learn more about all of that at iscea.org. You can also email Jorge. You can also connect with both Prabhat and Jorge on LinkedIn. And they welcome your feedback, and they welcome what you're doing in your neck of the woods with AI or with supply chain or learning, you name it. And of course, there's a slew of upcoming events that Jorge and the team are hosting, so we encourage you to get connected. Okay, what a great conversation. wide-ranging. I think I did get AI competent, as Jorge called it, right? AI competent earlier. So thank you, Prabhat, for that. And if you haven't gotten AI competent yet, Jorge, they can give you a call. You can swing by in your pickup truck, and you can take them to ISCA training so they can get competent. Is that good, Jorge?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to have company.
All right. All right. What a great conversation, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. One big thanks to Prabhat Panaka, of course, with Lowe's and with ISCEA. Prabhat, thanks for being here, my friend.
Yeah, the pleasure is mine. And I would close this by saying that tech fluency is a must. And every professional in every industry need to be like tech fluent. And the reason why I say that is ChatGPT has made it so easy to use technology, interact with AI. And they are like, you know, close to a billion users. So that means like, you know, it is going to be a part of your workflows tomorrow. So
yes.
Start along that journey of tech fluency. And it's a great show, Scott. I enjoyed being here with you and Jorge. And looking forward to, like, you know, the next episode, whenever that would happen.
It'll happen soon. I appreciate all of your kind words. It was a great episode, great conversation. Also, big thanks to my esteemed co-host, Jorge Morales. Always a pleasure, Jorge, to connect with you.
Thank you. Thank you, Scott. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
I appreciate what both you are doing in industry to make us all better and unlock all sorts of innovation and good change ahead. Okay. And by the way, Prabhat mentioned, is challenging folks. We've had all kinds of platforms make it easier. But one thing AI is not going to do is drag you out of bed, drag you into learning and workshops, and force you into the opportunities. We still, as humans, have to make that decision. It's just how it works, at least for now. We'll see what tomorrow brings, Prabhat. All right. So to our SE and Global fam, hope you enjoyed the conversation. But you know the homework, right? Prabhat and Jorge both brought some very practical, actionable perspective. Take one thing from what Prabhat or Jorge shared here today. Do something with it, right? Share it with your team. Put it in action. Deeds, not words. That's how we're going to keep transforming global supply chain and leave no one behind. And with that said, on behalf of the whole team here, Scott Luton, challenge you to do good, give forward, be the change that's needed. We'll see you next time right back here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.
Join the Supply Chain Now community for more supply chain perspectives, news, and innovation. Check out supplychainnow.com, subscribe to Supply Chain Now on YouTube, and follow and listen to Supply Chain Now wherever you get your podcasts.